Hello, and welcome to our latest Regulation Tomorrow Plus podcast. My name's Matt Gregory, and I'm one of the partners in the financial services team here at Norton Rose Fulbright. Today, we're going to look at the FCA's recent consultation paper, CP2324, which looks at capital deduction for redress from personal investment firms. I'm going to be joined by my colleague, Joe Bamford, who's a senior associate in the team, and we'll be diving into what these proposals really aim to achieve and what the impact is going to be for affected investment firms. So look, to begin with, Joe, why don't you start by setting the scene and just giving us a brief overview of what the FCA is doing and why?
Hi, Matt. Yeah, thanks. So this is all about the FCA consulting on new capital requirements for personal investment firms, what we're going to call PIFs for the duration of this podcast. And it's all about getting these firms really to manage their potential redress liabilities, and we'll come on to talk a bit more, I guess, what that quite means, more prudently. So what is the harm the FCA are really trying to address here? I guess what's the purpose of this whole consultation? So one of the things the FCA has identified is that there's been a lot of consumers who obviously can suffer harms as a result of the services they receive from personal investment firms, but where their claims have well exceeded the limits under the FSCS. And added to that, obviously, the FSCS have had to then make those claims, which has increased the level of the levy going over the last few years. So there's a sort of general concern, really, that good PIFs or personal investment firms are in turn really having to bail out the bad ones through the FSCS levy. And I think it's notable that I think it's around 95% of the FSCS liabilities have been linked to just 75 firms in this area. So it really does sort of appear to look that way. So in terms of remedying this issue, what the FCA are looking at doing is getting personal investment firms really to identify and estimate what their potential redress liabilities are at a much earlier stage, and then setting aside the capital for those purposes, and then ensuring that they can sort of build up their capital base to meet those potential liabilities. And if they don't have that in place, the FCA have sort of restrictions on potentially what they're able to do. The idea being really that the sort of this polluter pays principles coming into play as part of this whole consultation. So if it's sort of your potential liabilities, you really should be the people best placed to address those, rather than it being a problem that the rest of the industry has to pick up through the FSCS levy. So I guess that's the sort of broad overview outline, but we can get stuck into, I guess, some of the more details from the proposals in a second.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Exactly. So I mean, personal investment firms, from this perspective, for our listeners, are going to be firms that mainly provide advice or arrange deals in retail investments and pension products and so on. And effectively, I guess now we should go through what the meat of the proposals are, right? So what is it that firms are going to need to do now that we've kind of understood what the FCA is aiming to achieve in terms of objectives? So maybe I'll kick off with sort of the first stage, as it were, in this process. And just to bear in mind, obviously, these are rules that are being consulted upon at the moment. They're not the final rules. But first off, firms are going to need to identify and estimate potential redress liabilities. And I say this on almost all podcasts, but clearly there's a read across here to the consumer duty, isn't there? Thinking about monitoring and testing. And of course, we've got the board certification coming up. You can clearly see the regulator in that sort of frame of mind that firms really should be acting to prevent foreseeable harm. They shouldn't be waiting until those harms crystallize and then putting in place redress. Obviously, the regulator wants firms to aim to avoid those in the first place. So I suppose these proposals are a part of that, aren't they? Firms are going to assess those potential redress liabilities. And that's going to include both unresolved redress liabilities, so where, for example, the firms receive complaints, they've not been resolved, but it might give rise to a liability, and then prospective redress liabilities. So thinking again about foreseeable harms or systemic and recurring problems that might be identified from complaints information. And I think the regulator accepts, doesn't it, Joe, that not all of these potential redress liabilities might arise. So maybe you want to talk through the proposed approach to the kind of the quantification of that.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, the definition involves prospective redress liabilities, which could be pretty broad, really, and particularly thinking about sort of the root cause analysis you might need to do from that and flowing into the consumer duty, as you mentioned, Matt. And so the FCA have accepted that there needs to be a sort of probability factor for these purposes that you're going to then apply to your total potential redress liabilities to then work out exactly what capital you do need to set aside. So at the moment, they've set that at 28% that you apply. So if you think about it in the sense of if your estimated total potential redress liability as a firm was going to be around about 100,000, you would then apply the probability factor to that. And that would mean that you would need capital set aside from a prudential perspective of 28,000. That's broadly how these things are meant to work. I mean, it's interesting in the sense that the FCA, where did they get that 28% figure from? That's actually based on their own analysis regarding the uphold rate for complaints that have been made to personal investment firms over a few year period, between, I think it's 2020 and 2022 that they reference. And so that's why they sort of see that as the realistic figure that represents the likelihood of a complaint then leading to actual liability that needs to be paid to the customer. It's interesting, though, that the proposals, that's not a sort of static figure in the sense that the proposals that they're stating show that if a firm obviously knows that the sort of uphold rate for any potential liabilities is much higher than that, so it's going to be sort of 40-50% or whatever, they need to apply that factor instead. So you may end up having to hold a much higher amount of capital to one side. On the flip side, interestingly enough, it's that if you obviously have a much lower uphold rate than the 28% base, you actually do need to apply to the FCA essentially to use that lower figure. So there's a sort of floor there essentially of 28% could be higher, and you would need to engage with the FCA if it's going to lower. And obviously you would need to set out all of the sort of evidence base that you would have behind that in order to rely on a lower figure. So it's interesting. I mean, that's kind of then getting you to the whole piece of what is the figure that you have to set aside. I mean, Matt, I didn't know if you want to talk a bit more, I guess, then what firms might need to do under these proposals.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. So, I mean, clearly one needs to work through the extent to which the impact of these proposals, and I think this is something that firms should be doing now anyway, even though we're in consultation, will be met by the existing capital base. Where that's not the case and firms don't have sufficient regulatory capital to cover the potential redress liability, then there's going to need to be, well, proposed as a notification, obviously, and submitting a remediation plan. The ways in which the regulator proposes to work that through is that remediation plan obviously would explain the remedy and how that would work through retention of profits. So the idea being that those profits build a capital surplus that would cover the potential redress liability. And obviously the regulator recognises that could be reduced as a result of the firm either resolving the relevant issue or concluding that there's no realistic prospect of those liabilities arising. You know, if firms don't have that sufficient capital, then effectively they're going to be subject to a proposed asset retention requirement. And that would require firms to effectively refrain from undertaking certain transactions otherwise than in the ordinary course of business. And that's obviously without an FCA consent or notification. So effectively, these rules then will impose pretty stringent limitations on the business of the firm whilst it continues to improve its capital base to accommodate the potential redress liability. So I think the macro message from all of this is that there's a lot of work that firms are going to need to do in order to accurately assess those potential redress liabilities. Clearly, there's a lot of modelling that firms are going to need to do in terms of their capital base and the ways in which these potential redress liabilities will link across to the broader capital requirements framework and the way in which firms comply. And ultimately, I suppose, Joe, there's quite a significant potential prudential impact for a number of firms out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting. The FCA have obviously said they expect around, I think it's a third of firms in the market, they're going to need to set aside capital as a result of these rules. I think it's meant to be quite a very small number. They think around 2% that might be subject to those asset retention requirements you mentioned, i.e. where they've got sort of capital deficit, as it were, on the basis of what their potential redress liabilities are. So a large number of firms obviously in the sector should be well placed to sort of meet the rules from the get-go, but there's still going to be a reasonable impact there for around a third, I think. I mean, is it one of the other sort of, I guess, macro pieces on this, just to flag, is it, you know, the FCA aren't saying that everyone needs to sort of, you know, rummage around the back of the cupboards and look under every piece of paper to try and find potential redress liabilities that may be there that they might need to have capital for. But obviously, you know, thinking about, as you mentioned earlier, the consumer duty requirements that these firms are going to be on about and the root cause analysis and thinking about identifying recurring or systemic issues across their business, I think there is obviously, we're part of a regulated environment now where it's much more likely that you are going to have to think a bit more holistically about the complaints that you get, whether that's a bit more widespread. And that in turn may, as we go forward, lead to people having to think, recognize, I guess, and identify potential redress liabilities. So it's, as you mentioned earlier, Matt, I think it's all very much from the radio perspective meant to work in tandem, and in particular in the context of the duties cross-cutting rule about firms avoiding causing foreseeable harm in the first instance. I mean, okay, Matt, and if the FCA sort of commented on when they're expecting to revert on these consultation proposals.
Yep, that's right. So the regulator is shortly going to be closing the consultation. So it closes on the 20th of March. And then the regulator is going to publish their feedback to the consultation in the second half of this year, with rules expected to come into force in the first half of 2025. So quite a lot for firms to be thinking about in the investment advisory space at the moment, particularly as they come up against the first consumer duty board certification deadline this summer, as firms start to consider the full suite of their products and services and whether or not they have acted to deliver good outcomes for retail customers across all of them, it is a good opportunity, isn't it, to start to work through those points around potential customer harms. And firms would be well advised to start thinking about potential redress liabilities from a prudential as well as a conduct perspective in anticipation of potential rules in this area. It's also fair to say that this could well signal the direction of travel by the regulator for a number of other sectors in the retail market where there are historic redress liabilities. And so I think firms across sectors in the retail market would do well to consider these proposals and the potential implications for them for their business. So with all of that said, I'm going to draw that to a close with huge thanks to Joe for your contributions on today's podcast, and with thanks to you all for listening.